Welcome to Vermont Edition. I'm Bob Kinzel. Excuse me. Late yesterday morning, lawmakers elected Governor Peter Shumlin to a third term in office. Several hours later, Shumlin delivered his inaugural address to a joint assembly at the State House. The governor focused on two issues yesterday: an expansion of renewable energy programs and the future of Lake Champlain. Now, next week, in his budget address, Shumlin says he'll outline his plan to deal with the state's $100 million budget gap. And he hinted yesterday that the plan might include some budget cuts and new tax revenue.
We cannot simply cut our way out of our fiscal challenges year after year, taking away services that are so important to many Vermonters. Nor can we tax our way out of all of our problems. Instead, we must meet the challenge to match state spending to our economic growth while working to increase that growth in the years ahead for the health of Vermont's future.
What will be the governor's top priorities for the 2015 session? And will his proposals include some health care initiatives? These are some of the questions we have today for our guest, Governor Peter Shumlin. Governor, welcome back to Vermont Edition.
Hey, thanks for having me. It's great to be back, and I'm honored to be geared up to serve another term.
And our listeners can join the conversation here at Vermont Edition. Give us a call at 1-800-639-2211. That's 1-800-639-2211. You can always send us an email at vermontedition@vpr.net. Better yet, give us a call, 1-800-639-2211. Let's go back to yesterday for just a moment. A lot of single-payer health care advocates came to the State House to protest your decision not to pursue the single-payer approach this session. You actually had to sort of wade your way through the protesters outside the House chambers. You were walking from your State House ceremonial office to the House chamber to deliver your address. What were your thoughts as you made that walk? Did you have any security concerns?
You know, I let my security folks worry about my security. You know, this is what I felt about it. I'm as disappointed as they are that we can't get to a publicly financed system as fast as I want to and as fast as they want to. And, you know, I am a big supporter in believing that the great thing about Vermont, let's put it this way, the great thing about Vermont is that, you know, everyone gets to express their views and we have a very accessible democracy. And you can get to your governor and get to your legislators, your voice can be heard. What saddened me about yesterday was that it's the first time in my memory, and I suspect in Vermont's history, that you've literally seen inauguration interrupted and folks interrupted and people who were unable to give their message and be heard as well. And I just don't think that's how we do things in Vermont. So, you know, I was saddened by it. I think we appreciate civility. We appreciate people's voices being heard from all over the state. But what Vermonters don't appreciate is when you take away the voice of others because you feel that yours is more important.
This is the second incident that we've seen in the last couple of months. There was a sit-in at your office at the Pavilion office building from some folks who opposed the construction of the natural gas pipeline along the western part of the state. Do these two events in any way cause you to reconsider the security that you have at the State House and the security that you have as you travel around the state?
You know, I have great security, and Vermont State Police does a great job ensuring that I and frankly others are safe. What I was really impressed by in terms of the protesters when it comes to law enforcement is the hard work and the dignity with which the Vermont State Police, the Montpelier Police, and the Capitol Police dealt with the challenges they faced last night. I mean, they were hauling people out one by one. It was a hard work. They did it with dignity and with respect, and I'm proud of them. I do think, Bob, that we have to be very careful in Vermont, that we don't enter a slippery slope where we join the rest of America in being so divided that we stop listening to each other and being so intent upon our beliefs being the right beliefs and the only beliefs that we're willing to undermine other people's point of view and to do it in a way that departs from the civility that holds Vermont together. And you know, just referred to a couple of examples. I've had other examples that have been unreported where, you know, I'll come out of a restaurant and suddenly be, you know, ambushed by protesters. Let's keep Vermont, Vermont. Let's listen to each other. Let's keep government open. Let's be willing to listen to each other as well as express our point of view. But I don't think that you did our single payer cause much good yesterday by interrupting an inaugural inauguration is special to Vermont. They mean a lot. It's all the statehood office holders being sworn in. It's the legislature and the governor all coming together for the first time. It's a celebration. It's an opportunity for us to say, hey, let's roll up our sleeves, put aside the partisanship, do what's best for Vermont. I just think we've got to be very careful that we don't enter the slippery slope where we are willing to do almost anything to get our point of view across.
So as you think about that, does it cause you to think maybe there are some changes in security that are needed or not?
I hope not. I've always worked, you know, I remember during right after 9/11 when I was president of the Senate and there were efforts to put in, you know, metal detectors and sort of try to put up barriers between people's access to democracy in Vermont. I think that'd be a shame. So let's not overreact. I think it's more important for me and others to be willing to say the truth when they see it. And the truth is, I wish they would apologize. I hope we won't see that kind of behavior again. Let's all find a way for us to listen to each other without taking away each other's free speech and without standing in a way of civility and decency that makes Vermont the special place that it is.
Well, you know, in a larger sense of looking at the single-payer decision that you made, some people really question that decision. And here's one of the reasons why. Act 48, the health care reform law that was passed in 2011, set up the Green Mountain Care Board, laid the groundwork for single-payer. It called for a financing plan to cover a benefit package that would be similar to either the silver plan on the exchange or the gold plan. I mean, that was actually written into the law. And yet, when you reviewed single payer, you went and chose the platinum plan, which is the plan that has the lowest deductibles, the lowest copays, clearly the most expensive plan out there. Why did you do that?
Well, first of all, I want to point out that we actually outlined two plans in our report. We did an 80, what we call AV, and a 94 AV. We did that because what Act 48 really asked me to do as governor is to do all the hard work, which we did. We did more hard work on this issue, I suspect, than any state in the nation, any governor's ever done. And then it said, recommend the plan that makes most sense for Vermont. And here are the facts. We're not talking about more expensive or less expensive. We're talking about how we pay for the health care that Vermonters are currently getting. An 80 AV or the lower you go, what it means is that Vermonters pay more out of pocket than you would if you had a 94 AV. So 94 AV basically means the plan covers 94% of your coverage, and 80 basically means the plan covers 80. Two things that are really important to know about the 80 that we ran. The first is our economists said that it would hurt Vermonters' pocketbooks. It would hurt their economic strength. It would take away benefits to them, both taking money out of their pockets and asking for a lot of money when they went to providers that would hurt them economically. Now, the first thing Act 48 said is come up with a plan, Governor, that's going to help Vermont grow Vermonters' income, not shrink it. So that was the first challenge we had. The 80 AV didn't do what Act 48 asked us to do and what only makes common sense. The second part is that the savings between an 80 AV and a 94 AV didn't significantly change what we were going to be asking Vermonters to pay in payroll taxes and income taxes to go, aha, wow, this solves all our problems. Let's go with a really low coverage under insurance for most Vermonters. And, you know, we can justify it by saying, you know, look at this. It's so much lower in terms of the money we're asked to raise. So it just didn't have any of the benefits. So we did what the law asked us to do. Let's be honest about this. I don't see too many Vermonters, legislators running out there saying, hey, the governor did work on the 80 AV and he did work on a 94 AV, and I'm really excited about passing either one of them. So in other words, if your conclusion was correct, that we somehow did something to go out with the most expensive plan, why aren't a lot of legislators running out there right now saying, the governor did all the work on the ADAV, let's pass it?
You know, it's interesting. In 2011, Harvard professor Dr. William Hsiao released a study concerning the financing of a single-payer system. And that report said it would take roughly an 11% payroll tax on businesses and between a 5 and 6% payroll tax on individuals to raise the $2 billion that would be necessary to finance single-payer. Now, your administration has studied this issue for over 3 years. You came to exactly the same conclusion.
So no, we didn't. Let me tell you why your math is wrong.
Okay.
If you add up those two payrolls that you just came to, it came to roughly 17% combined. Our plan was going to require a 11.5% payroll tax. It was going to require another 5 points on a payroll tax for the first 3 years. So you're literally talking 17-18% on a payroll tax, plus at the highest end, a 9.5% income tax. So what I found so striking about our numbers were that they were so much higher than what Hsiao came up with.
You know, it's interesting because I remember talking to you about the Hsiao plan, and you saw that 11.5% payroll tax for businesses and said, whoa, that's way too high. We got to get it down to about half of that, and the same thing would be true for individuals. And then we got to figure out a way to backfill the money that isn't going to be raised by those two sources. So whatever happened to that concept?
When we went to backfill the sources that we looked at all the sources of money that we come up with, what you find when you get away from an income tax and a payroll tax combination is that unless you invent a new tax, there is the sales tax, the rooms and meals tax, all the other ways that we tax folks in Vermont just don't raise that much revenue. So when you're trying to move from a premium-driven system to one that's financed publicly by taxes, it's obviously a huge challenge. We all knew that. But you have to have there is no other source of revenue that raises that kind of money. So really what happened? What happened was this. We ended up in a position where we lost much of the federal funding or a good chunk of the federal funding that we thought we would be able to get to finance this plan. And that was our biggest challenge. In other words, why did the numbers go up so much for us, even higher than what Hsiao suggested? Because he did not have a local income tax in there. We did, or I should say a public premium. And the answer is that, as we reported in our report, there were a lot of factors against us, a lot of headwinds. But the biggest one was the loss of federal funds that we assumed we would get back. And had we passed the plan, what we were trying to negotiate with the feds was that single payer in Vermont wouldn't be a windfall for the federal government. And we were having conversations with both Secretary Burwell and the Treasury about ways that we could get back the deductibility of health care premiums that we currently enjoy. Vermont businesses is deductible, individuals is deductible if you're working for a company. We obviously failed in doing that for a lot of reasons, some which were political, some which were practical, and we didn't have the federal funds that we thought we'd have when we originally embarked on this journey.
Let's go to our listeners and talk to Tom in Richmond. Hey, Tom, welcome to the program.
Hi, Bob. Hi, Peter.
Hi.
Peter, I just wanted to say thank you, you know, for trying to be a leader in the revising of health care, because frankly, there's a lot of interests out there to make sure it doesn't happen. And, you know, it's a yeoman's job. Nobody's gonna win easily with the job.
Right.
And I've seen other places where you put yourself out there in terms of leadership to make the statement that Vermont does lead in these areas. And really, you know, we don't just sit back. We actually say, well, what can be done? And, you know, I've taken a lot of flack lately, and I just wanted to give you my vote. You know, not the voters' vote, but the ideological vote, which says, just keep doing the work. You know, in the end, that's where it shows up.
Thanks, Tom. I really appreciate it. And I got to tell you, I'm going to do exactly that. And as disappointed as I am that we're not going to get a publicly financed system as quickly, a universal publicly financed system as quickly as we can, I will come out next week with healthcare proposals that will advance us to where we need to go. And I am saying to everyone that will listen, and I'm working with a lot of the folks that really want to get this done and are being so constructive, folks like Deb Richter and others, and we're going to roll up our sleeves and find other ways to get there. And we'll do it. And we're going to, you know, it's going to require some courage. But the fact of the matter is, when you talk about the issues in this election and what's making Vermonters and frankly Americans so frustrated, it's that the gap between the small percentage of folks who have all the wealth and everybody else hasn't been wider, as I said yesterday, since the Great Depression, before the Depression. We're literally seeing the middle class work harder and harder, play by the rules and sit still. They can't pay their bills or they don't see their incomes going up. Low-income Americans and Vermonters are losing ground since the Great Recession, not Depression, but Recession. And the one, you know, what my job is to go after the real cost drivers that are holding their incomes back. And if anyone thinks that it's not healthcare, you're just not looking at the numbers. Healthcare spending is growing faster than it can be sustained. So I'm bound and determined to make Vermont the first state that moves from a quantity-based payment system, fee-for-service, to one that pays our hardworking providers for quality, for outcomes, for keeping us healthy. We've got to do something about the Medicaid cost shift because that's driving our primary care providers right out of business. I mean, they get 40 cents on a dollar from a provider. They just can't keep up. And that shifts cost to the folks who are doing the right thing and buying insurance for their employees in the business sector. And I think we can make real progress in other areas that will help get the rest of the uninsured covered over time because we're down to 3% uninsurance rates. That's great progress. That's thanks to the Affordable Care Act. And we've got to work on access to primary care providers. All those things we can do, which will help set the stage for us eventually doing what is logical and ensuring that people have health care because they live in Vermont, not because of where they're lucky enough to work or how wealthy they might be.
You mentioned the cost shift, Medicaid cost shift. It's a huge amount of people's private health insurance premiums. It's been estimated to be between 15 and 20% of your private health insurance premium is because of the cost shift. I mean, that's a staggering number that probably most folks don't know. So, for instance, if you were paying $8,000 for a healthcare policy, we're talking about $1,600 there.
That's right.
Are you prepared next week to make a major proposal to put a fairly big dent in this cost shift?
I want to put as big a dent as I can in it, understanding the difficult fiscal times that we're in. I've also got to solve, you know, $100 million budget gap. So these are tough times. But having said that, the answer is yes. I want to put Vermont on a course to correcting that wrong, because it really is. And it's also being compounded by our success in helping out the uninsured. What do I mean by that? We just cut our uninsured rates in half since we implemented the Affordable Care Act and Vermont Health Connect. Now, I understand the website's been a challenge. It's been a disappointment to many, including me. But the fact of the matter is, the website doesn't get you insurance. The Affordable Care Act does. You know, that's what you take the card to the doc or to your provider. So we've cut that in half from roughly 40,000 to 20,000 Vermonters. Much of that has been because the feds had the good judgment to expand Medicaid in the Affordable Care Act. And so what it's done is exacerbated that cost shift, made it tougher for our primary care providers because they're getting 40 cents on a dollar for the work they're doing and many of the procedures for the folks that are showing up at the door. So we must take care of that cost shift.
Today on the program, our guest is Governor Peter Shumlin. Our phone number is 1-800-639-2211. When we come back, we're going to get to a lot of your comments and calls. This is Vermont Edition on VPR. Welcome back to Vermont Edition. I'm Bob Kinzel. Our guest today is Governor Peter Shumlin. Our phone number, 1-800-639-2211. Let's start with Philip in Burlington. Hi, Philip. Welcome to the program.
Hi, Bob. Thanks for having me. And Governor Shumlin, thanks for coming on.
Hey, thanks for calling in.
Sure. I would just like to say quickly that I support the governor's renewable energy policies. People tend to focus on the clean energy, climate, and environmental arguments behind these. But in reality, I think that they bring a lot of investment into local businesses and create a lot of jobs. It brings a lot of locally generated energy to the state. And it brings the benefits of a stronger and more reliable electric grid.
Well, thanks, Philip. And, you know, as I mentioned yesterday, I see this, what we're doing with energy innovation in Vermont, as the a huge economic opportunity going forward to create jobs and to reverse some of the financial pressures Vermonters are under. You know, when we were talking about affordability a minute ago, the other issue is rising oil prices. And, you know, that hits you when you fill up your car, and it hits you when you put oil in your tank, which many Vermonters heat with. And, you know, we've seen a little relief lately, but we all know it's not going to last. We also know it's bad for the environment to burn that stuff, and it's going to contribute to our climate change challenges. But Vermont really is the energy innovation leader. And what I said yesterday, you know, about this sort of analogy that renewable energy and energy innovation to Vermont could well be like what was happening, you know, half a century ago when we were cutting ski trails into our Green Mountains. I mean, it could be that big in terms of jobs, economic opportunity, and putting dollars in Vermonters' pockets. And the plan I went out with yesterday that promotes our new, you know, initiative to ensure that our utilities, our regulators, all of our players in this field who are united in ways that you don't find in other states. In other states, the utilities still have models where they think, buy big generation out there somewhere, bring it in on poles and wires, sell as much of it you can to your customers, and that's your business model. Our utility leaders in Vermont are saying, wait, that's not the future. The future is locally generated green power backed up by incredible energy efficiency in our older homes and buildings so that we're literally swapping out the doors, you know, changing out the windows, insulating it, pumping it with cellulose or whatever it takes, you know, solar panels on the roof, a heat pump in the basement. You're getting your hot and cold air taken care of along with your hot water and your heat while you do it, generating your own juice. And that's what we're going to go to. And that's the model that our utilities want to promote. That's a huge opportunity for us all. And it will help promote renewables. It'll help put dollars in Vermonters' pockets that are struggling to pay their bills right now. It's just a win-win. 15,000 jobs right now in Vermont related to our green energy economy. We could double and quadruple that if we play our cards right.
We also got this email on energy from Fran, who wants to applaud you for highlighting energy efficiency and renewable energy in your address yesterday. Fran writes, comprehensive weatherization puts money in Vermonters' pockets and creates jobs in the energy sector. I hope to see wide support for energy efficiency in the coming legislative session for Vermonters of all income levels. Another subject yesterday in your speech, you did a lot on renewable energy, but you also talked about Lake Champlain. And we got a couple of emails about that from people who are directly involved in the effort to clean up Lake Champlain. That would be Denise Smith, Executive Director of Friends of Northern Lake Champlain, and also Kim Greenwood, who is the Water Program Director and Staff Scientist at VNRC. And basically what they both say is, how will your administration make sure that your plan stays on track? What tools do you have to make sure that this plan, A, gets fully funded in the legislative session and gets fully implemented? It's a plan that is quite different than how the federal EPA wants to deal with this issue.
Well, first of all, Denise and Kim are doing great work up there, and they know what many people don't, which is that the idiocy, the frustration of the federal government right now is that the Congress can't get through a new and smart Clean Water Act. So for years, we've been working with the old one. And what the old one says is, when the EPA comes in, as they have in Vermont, and said, you've got blue-green algae, your lakes stink, you're polluting them beyond belief, you got to clean them up, they say submit a plan, which we've done. If they don't accept our plan, then their only hook is to, the only leverage they have in a Clean Water Act is to say, you shall now spend hundreds and hundreds of millions of dollars replacing every single wastewater treatment plant that you've got in your towns across Vermont. And the scary part is, the foolish part is, that contributes 3% of the pollution to our lake, roughly. So you wouldn't be solving 97% of the problem. You'd still have blue-green algae, you'd still have blooms, and you'd still have stink. So that's why this is so critical to both Vermont's quality of life and economic future. So what I'm saying is, listen, I've come out with a pretty bold proposal, I'm already getting beaten up for it, that's going to help pay for mitigating the contributions that we're making to the lake. Those are coming primarily from three sources. One is farm runoff that we all know about, phosphorus going into our waterways. The second is from impervious surfaces on commercial buildings, you know, big, you know, boxes and the rest, and big parking lots. So, you know, runoff from those things. And the third is from our back roads, believe it or not. When we don't properly ditch and drain, the phosphorus that's already embedded in the ground in a storm washes and comes into our waterways. So I went out with a pretty bold proposal that raises the money here in Vermont from often the folks who are helping to contribute to the challenge, as well as my new initiative, the Vermont Water Clean Water Fund, that's asking the private sector to help pay. And I'm incredibly grateful to Cura Green Mountain for donating the first $5 million to that effort. We need more people to come up to the plate. But together, we're going to raise the resources. Then we need the EPA to accept our plan. They won't accept it unless we're serious. My plan's serious. Then the EPA joins us in making sure that we follow through. So how can you help? Call your legislator. When the critics that I'm hearing from now say, I don't know why the governor's focused on the lake. It's not that big a deal. He should have focused on other things. The lake's a big deal. It's an economic driver for Vermont. It's where the basis of our quality of life is clean water in Vermont. If we're leaving our kids and grandkids blue-green algae that stinks so bad you can't get near the lake, listen, that's not Vermont. That's not the future we want. So call your legislators and tell them to push the package through.
You were talking about some of the sources of the pollution, and in your address yesterday, you said agricultural runoff, manure runoff, is responsible for about 40% of the problem. And you talked about there are some critics of this plan. We've heard pushback from farmers who were saying, why are you hanging this on us? Are we really that big a part of the problem? And what are you going to do to help us that isn't going to bankrupt us?
And the answer is we're all in this together and we're all a part of the problem. But there's no question that farms are 40% of the problem. And what I'm doing a little differently, I hope, is saying this because, you know, politicians don't like to get near this rail. I'm going because I'm bound and determined to get clean water. Most farmers in Vermont want to do the right thing. They do. The problem we have is that there are two things that hold them back. One is money, resources to do the right thing. It's fencing, it's changing tilling practices, it's moving to, you know, low till practices and not spreading manure in all the ways that we're doing it and making some changes there. And the second is fencing. You know, it's fencing folks, livestock out of water and the rest. What my plan will do is raise the money to partner with them to give them the resources they need to do the right thing. Then I'm saying, if after all the education and the partnership together and giving you some of the resources to help you pay the bill, you're still not willing to do it, then we're not going to pay for your property tax reductions anymore. Now, most farmers are in the current use program. They pay 200-300% less for property taxes than they would if they weren't. Their neighbors are subsidizing that program or helping to pay for it. Why should we help give someone a property tax reduction when they're willfully polluting a lake? So this, most farmers will get the resources, the education, the help from the state that they need. If you still refuse, it is time for Vermont to take this seriously because it's 40% of the problem. We're all in this together. But I think what Vermonters are sick and tired. They're sick and tired of the finger pointing of folks who say, I'm not part of the problem. You are. We are all part of the problem. We're all in this together, but we're going to have to be tough, serious, and willing to both pay and act to get our way out of this mess.
Let's go back to our callers and talk to Gordon in Northfield. Hey, Gordon, what's on your mind today?
Well, Bob, hi, Governor. Hey. We're Gordon Block. You know me through my prison advocacy work with Cure Vermont.
Yep.
Well, let me say mazel tov or congratulations to the rest of the audience that doesn't know what that means. Let me be blunt, kind of like Peter Shumlin. You squeaked through the election by a couple thousand votes. You returned to office by a nail biter in the legislature. There's been talk about Peter Shumlin, you know, sees all this as this cliffhanger, as a call to be a different kind of governor. Clearly, not being at the helm of the Democratic governors, you'll be here in Vermont a lot more. What other specific changes will we see at the risk of invoking President Bush the First? Will you be a kinder, gentler governor? Will you work on recasting your style and your image? Will you work to be a better listener? What will Governor Peter Shumlin look like and be like from 2015 forward, sir?
Well, I'm going to really focus on the issues that I think were making Vermonters so frustrated in this election. This was a frustration vote. You know, I think, you know, I recognize that It was a vote more about Governor Shumlin than it was about Governor Shumlin's opponent. So I get that. It was about me. And I've said a couple things since the election. First is, obviously, I think, you know, listening, being more inclusive, slowing down in some areas when I want to, you know, move with great speed, be more cautious about being very careful to lay out the obstacles that we have to get to the big goals that I want to accomplish. But I think most importantly, the lesson for me was, listen, we understand that we're not alone in Vermont. In fact, Vermont's economy is doing better than most of our neighboring states. We're actually growing out of this recession. You know, believe it or not, despite the $100 million budget deficit, we're taking in more money than we were a year ago. Businesses are growing slowly. But what Vermonters are really saying is, go after the things that are really holding back our prosperity. And I just mentioned what they are. They're obviously finding ways to grow new jobs and new economic opportunity. The energy sector is one of them, but there's a lot of places we can do that. The second is to ensure that our quality of life, you know, that's the one thing that holds us together, that keeps us wanting to stay here, doesn't get polluted out before our eyes. The third is education spending. Many Vermonters feel is growing faster than their incomes, and they're right. So we got to find some smart ways to do that while we enhance quality of our schools, because we want to make sure, first, that we've got the best schools, and secondly, that we've got affordable schools. And then finally, that we find a way to do healthcare in a smarter way so that it's not gobbling up all of our incomes. Now, then you can throw in some of the work that you're doing. Obviously, we're making progress on addiction and heroin and opiate addiction. Let's keep that up. Let's not back off. We got to find ways to keep our kids safer. So we got a lot of stuff on the plate. But I think the message was, don't stop trying to do the big things that are going to make our lives better. Just be sure that we're all doing it in a way that where you, Governor, are communicating more clearly what you're doing, being inclusive, listening, and getting it done.
Let's turn to Steve in Underhill. Hey, Steve, welcome to the program.
Thanks very much. Hi, Governor Shumlin.
Hi.
First, I really want to thank you especially for your leadership on renewable energy, environment, and healthcare. You've done a great job so far.
Thank you.
As you know, one of the biggest contributors to global climate change in Vermont is transportation,
yep,
which is responsible for some 40 to 50% of our CO2 emissions. Today, many Vermonters commute less than 40 miles round trip, which is easily within the range of a 100% electric car, even on the coldest days of the winter. Yesterday, I did my commute, my 40-mile commute to Burlington in my 100% electric Nissan Leaf when it was minus 18 degrees. I had the heater running, consuming electricity, and I produced the power from my car with our photovoltaic system, so my commuting is relatively environmentally benign. So my question for you is, what can Vermont do to encourage greater use and purchase of electric cars?
First of all, thank you, Steve, because you are one of the energy pioneers that I think is the future. And this is what we're trying to do. Obviously, we want to, you know, I personally think that we should be enhancing or trying to do everything we can to make the electric vehicles more affordable when you go and buy them. But most importantly, having the plug-ins so that folks realize that the biggest fear, the biggest thing that's holding us back from moving to electric vehicles, or one of them, is the fear that you'll end up somewhere and you won't be able to plug it in and you're stuck. And so that's why I've been pushing so hard to add EV plug-ins, which we're doing with speed, but we should be doing even more of it. But big picture, part of the model that I see, and I think many people across Vermont see, as our energy future, energy innovation, is, in addition to all the things I just mentioned, tightening up the homes, having the solar on your roof as you do, or wherever you have it, tracker, whatever you're doing, having a heat pump or whatever you're doing in the basement so you get off of oil, you're going to be plugging your car in. And that's the future for Vermont. And I'll do whatever it takes from a public policy standpoint to help advance that. I also think technology is our friend on this one, because we're continuously seeing the automobile industry, in the research and development that they're doing, move to EVs that are going to be able to go longer range with more comfort and more predictability. So I'm very optimistic that we will be able to go after this, not just in Vermont, but around New England.
Today on the program, our guest is Governor Peter Shumlin. Our phone number is 1-800-639-2211. When we come back, we're going to take a look at that $100 million budget gap. This is Vermont Edition on VPR. Welcome back to Vermont Edition. I'm Bob Kinzel. Our guest today is Governor Peter Shumlin. Our phone number, 1-800-639-2211. Governor, next week, as you mentioned, you'll deliver your budget address to lawmakers. It'll contain a number of key issues. One is how you'd like to see the legislature deal with that $100 million budget gap. Now, as we heard right at the top of the program today, you said yesterday, quote, "We cannot simply cut our way out of our fiscal challenge year after year, taking away services that are important to so many Vermonters. Nor can we tax our way out of this problem." And then you go on to say that in the long term, you think solid economic growth is the best way to sustain an important budget. That sure sounds like a temporary tax increase of some sort to help bridge the next couple of years until economic growth can take over this job. Do I have that right?
Well, here's the challenge. We right now have a spending trend in state government that's around 5%. And the economists are telling us that not only this year, but going forward for Vermont and New England, we're going to see roughly a 3% growth rate. So if you went out, let's just say hypothetically, and raised $100 million of taxes from hardworking Vermonters, and you kept spending at 5% and growth at 3%, you'd be right here back here next year saying, oh my gosh, we're spending more money than we're taking in. We got to raise taxes again. So that's not a good economic model. That's not a model for prosperity. That's not answering the voters that I just heard who said, hey, I'm having trouble paying my bills as it is. Please don't put a lot more burden on me. So my approach to the last four budgets that I've balanced, and I've done four now, has always been, and you know I sound like a broken record, Vermont's income tax rates, sales tax rates, and rooms and meals tax rates are high enough. And, you know, we have a very progressive tax system in Vermont. I'm proud of that system. We ask the wealthiest to pay the most. We ask those who make the least to pay the least. We have one of the most progressive income tax rates in the country. So having said that, I've got to find a way to right the ship by simply finding sustainable, I should say, curbing the rate of growth in ways that are sustainable without displacing Vermonters that are really hurting.
So will your plan that you unveil next week include any new revenue to help balance this budget?
If I told you that, you wouldn't come to the speech. Oh. I need you there. I need you there. But, you know, those are questions governors don't usually answer 6 days before a speech for obvious reasons. But what I am going to do is outline to you a sustainable path forward for Vermont. And this is critical with all the other issues that we've been talking about. If you don't have a balanced budget, you're not doing your job. And we've been blessed in Vermont by having governors, both Democrat and Republican, whose first priority has always been run this like a business, pay your bills, don't pile up debt for kids and grandkids, which is why we have one of the best bond ratings in the country, and don't ask Vermonters to pay taxes so high that they just can't make ends meet. And so that's the balance.
But what I also hear you saying is that trying to reduce spending by $100 million could cause the state to make some pretty drastic cuts in essential programs, and that you're very reluctant to do that, and that while you might not choose the income tax, the sales tax, or the rooms and meals tax, you might have another revenue source to help bridge yourself for the next year or two until you get the economic growth that you want.
We're being as creative as we possibly can to do this in a way that is balanced, as I said yesterday, but I really can't go into the details here. It's very much related. This isn't a single conversation. What is the biggest, one of the biggest drivers of our budget? It's healthcare costs. So this is a package that we will lay out that will address both our healthcare challenges and our budget challenges. They're interrelated.
So you've talked about raising the reimbursement rate for healthcare providers. You just said a few moments ago how important it is to do that. That's going to require some new money as well, isn't it?
You cannot deal with a cost shift without finding ways to reimburse our primary care providers at a more reasonable rate. That's right.
Let's turn to Dave in Randolph. Hey, Dave, welcome to the program.
Thank you, and thank you, Governor, for taking the time out of your work day to answer Vermonters' questions. I had a question. I think it feels now more like an answer. I want to know where we stand on marijuana legalization, recreational legalization for adults, and I'm very interested in how that, the answer to that question could relate to our budget shortfall. I'm hearing some really wonderful financial information out of Washington and Colorado in terms of tax revenue being raised through legal recreational marijuana.
Well, thanks for calling in, Dave. The RAND report that we have commissioned will come out next week. And basically what that report does is it looks at our pioneers in Colorado and in Washington State and tries to learn lessons from them in terms of what's working, what's not working. So what the report will really say, I believe, is not so much, hey, go ahead with marijuana legalization with great fury or don't do it. I think it'll just say, here are your challenges, here are your opportunities, here are the pros, here are the cons. Then the question is, what do we do with that information? Now, in terms of the tax question, even if you were to, let's just put it this way, there's no scenario I don't see where even if you were to go to legalization and get some tax revenue from it, it would have an impact on the budget I'm working on right now, because I'm working on a 16 budget and you just couldn't, you couldn't get it up and running in a thoughtful way fast enough to have any impact on the budget challenges today. Having said that, you know, my bias is, and I'm obviously objective, and I've said this before, my bias is towards legalization. The question I think for Vermont is, why not let the pioneers in this one figure out what works, what doesn't, so that if and when we do it, and I think Vermont will, we can really make sure we get it right. And I think that's what the RAND report will help us with. So I'm looking forward to the dialogue going forward. I'm not in any great hurry to get there, but I know we will eventually.
So as you look at the experience of Colorado and Washington, are there things happening there that are any kind of warning signs for you?
You know, you can find some warning signs, but you can also find successes. I'm a very close personal friend of Governor Hickenlooper, and we've known each other for years. We were in college at the same time, at the same college. And he went into this as a real skeptic. He was dead against it. It passed by referendum. You got to know that no state has passed it legislatively with the governor supporting it yet. And he was really a skeptic. And, you know, he grew up with us in the 70s and 80s and 90s. And, you know, he's hardly, on a personal level, you know, someone who probably I would guess, although I probably shouldn't speak for him, didn't do all the things that a lot of kids did in those years. Having said that, he feels that Colorado's experience has overall been very positive, and he's much more positive about it than he was when he started out. So he saw this sort of as something that he was being asked to do that he didn't want to do at all. He was against it. He's now saying our lessons in Colorado are pretty positive.
We are almost out of time, but let's see if we can get a very quick call in from Ned in Essex Junction. Hey, Ned, what's on your mind?
Hi. My mind is Vermont Gas is proposing to run in this gas pipeline in Chittenden and Addison counties, and they are unable to come up with a firm price. Now, there's no cap. Are you willing to take a stand and tell Public Service to have them cap their price, and if they go over, don't pass the ad on to the ratepayers, but take it out of their profit? How would you deal with this?
Governor, we have about a minute.
I'll be really quick, Ned. Thanks for calling in. I already have. I haven't done exactly what you said, but what I said was when I saw the cost overrun for the second time, which was a disappointment to me, I said to my commissioner, please go plead to the board to have them rescrub these numbers. Let's look at both phase one and phase two to make sure they make economic sense for Vermonters before we go forward any further. So that's my responsibility. I think it's the board's responsibility, frankly. They're doing a great job. They're going to rescrub those numbers. And, obviously there's no sense in building any energy project unless it's in Vermonters' economic interest going forward.
Do you think it's doubtful that this project will go forward now?
You know, I'm not going to speculate on that just because I don't know enough about it. That's obviously the board's job. And I'm always careful as governor not to weigh in or try to influence the board when they're doing their good work. I've got a lot of confidence in the Public Service Board. They'll scrub the numbers, they'll get the facts, and they'll act on facts. And that's why I respect them.
Well, there's certainly a lot of issues. We'll be following all session. Governor Peter Shumlin, many thanks for being on the program
today. Thanks for having me. Thanks, Vermonters, for giving me a shot at another 2 years to get great things done for Vermont. Let's work together to do it.
That is our program for today. On Monday, we'll talk about what you need to get and keep a job. It's not all extra degrees and computer training. We'll talk about the soft skills employers are looking for, things like public speaking and getting along with difficult co-workers. Tell us what you think the most important skills are for getting along at work. Email VermontEdition@vpr.net and join us Monday at noon. Vermont Edition is produced by Patty Daniels, Rick Sengary, and Sage Van Wing. We have production assistance from Devin Karambulis. Mary Williams directed the show. Our executive producer is John Van Hoosen. I'm Bob Kinzel. Have a great weekend.